Welcome to Faith and Freedom. We hope to inform, inspire, and encourage you to stand up for faith and freedom as we discuss victories and challenges in the courts, in public policy, and in the culture. Faith and Freedom is brought to you by Liberty Counsel, a litigation, education, and policy organization. Join us now as we address the latest cultural issues across America and around the world.
The Supreme Court decides the employment cases but comes down on the wrong side of the law. We're going to be talking about this on Faith and Freedom. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Joining me is Holly Mead. Now, before we go into the meat of this, one of the things that is a bright side, if there is one to this, and there is some bright side, and that is the decision regarding what the court did on Title VII, the employment law, likely does not apply or will not apply to religious employers. And we can break that apart a little bit later, but that is one of the bright sides. Other than that, it's a terrible decision.
Shocking, to say the least. We were really shocked at this result.
I thought the decision would come down 5-4, but I didn't know which side of the five it would be on. I thought it would be that close, and I thought Chief Justice John Roberts would be the deciding vote. Mm-hmm. I did not think it would be Justice Gorsuch actually writing the opinion, and so it was a 6-3 opinion involving Gorsuch, Roberts, Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. And then on the dissent was Alito, Thomas, and Kavanaugh, so it was 6-3. Now, there were three cases that were all consolidated together. One is the Bostic case out of Clayton County, Georgia.
These are all employment cases.
These are all employment cases. And the Altitude Express case. Bostic was a public employer. Altitude Express was a private employer. In both of those cases, they terminated somebody who was homosexual. In one case, they were a counselor. In the other case, they were a parachute
instructor. Yeah.
And made some offensive comment to a woman that was strapped to him for the skydive. And the third case was the Harris Funeral Homes case, and that was the so-called transgender case. This was the guy who came to work, and he had been working at the funeral home.
As a man.
He's biological male, and he ultimately told the funeral home that he's going to take a little bit of time off, and he's going to come back as a, quote, female. And these are very sensitive situations. You know, families are grieving, of course, and it would put some awkwardness into the whole situation. That's what this particular person with the Harris Funeral Homes said, and it would disrupt the grieving process if that became an issue. And plus, he also had a religious objection to it, and so he was terminated. All three of these cases went to the Supreme Court. Two of the three plaintiffs in this case, the transgender person and one of the homosexuals, died during the process within the last year. So their cases were continued on through various estates. But here's what they did. The question is whether Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which includes the word sex as a protected category for non-discrimination, includes sexual orientation and gender identity. Now, the odd thing is that the court begins with the assumption that Title VII refers to biological male and female. Seems like that should have ended the inquiry.
Right, that seems like a no-brainer.
And that's a no-brainer. But then what the court ultimately did was say, well, if you are terminating someone, a man, because he's having a relationship with a man, or a man who is born, and in the majority opinion says identified at birth, which that is, you know, there's no lottery that happens at birth and you're just randomly assigned. It's based on your biology and your physiology as to how you're indicated as to a male or female at birth. But it says that, you know, somebody who is born male, or in this case they say identified as male at birth, but then later identifies as female and you terminate that person, it's because of that person's sex. Now, that I think is a real judicial activist legislation from the bench kind of approach, because they clearly indicated, number one, that the word sex refers to biological male and female. Two, that the drafters of the 1964 Act would not have conceived that it covers sexual orientation or gender identity. All true. But then they go on to give these hypotheticals that really go outside of the case. Justice Alito wrote a very stinging, a very long dissent in the case, and he puts a lot of information in his opinion. And he continues on for page after page after page regarding why the opinion is wrong. He begins his dissent by saying, there's only one word for what the court has done today, legislation. The document that the court releases is in the form of a judicial opinion interpreting a statute. Mm-hmm. But that is deceptive, he says. Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, he goes on, prohibits employment discrimination on any of five specified grounds, race, color, religion, sex, and national origin. Neither sexual orientation nor gender identity appears in that list. For the last 45 years, bills have been introduced in Congress to add sexual orientation to the list, and in recent years, the bills have included gender identity as well. But to date, none has passed both houses. He goes on to talk about how that if you look at the courts, the Supreme Court majority opinion says at long last, for example, this issue has come to the court and the Supreme Court will decide it because of the conflicts in the various lower courts. However, Justice Kavanaugh, in his separate dissent, he says this, quote, because judges interpret the law as written, not as they might wish it were written, the first 10 U.S. courts of appeal to consider whether Title VII prohibits sexual orientation discrimination all said no. 10 circuit courts of appeal said no. Some 30 federal judges considered the question. All 30 judges said no based on the text of the statute. 30 out of 30. This is his dissent. But in the last few years, a new theory has emerged to end run the bedrock separation of powers principle that courts may not unilaterally rewrite statutes. The plaintiffs here, and recently two courts of appeal, have advanced a novel and creative argument. And he goes on to say that, you know, in fact, the first court of appeals, 10 courts of appeals that considered this said, no, sexual orientation, gender identity, no, you can't interpret it that way. 30 judges that first considered said no, pretty unanimous. The first court of appeals that ultimately engaged in judicial activism was 2017. Now we're at 2020. Wow. 2017. This law was passed in 1964. There have been decades of attempts for Congress to amend it to include sexual orientation, then later gender identity. None of those were successful because they couldn't get it to the president's desk. 10 courts of appeals said no, it doesn't include it. 30 judges said no. First Court of Appeals, 2017, said, well, I think it should include it in the word sex. Now the Supreme Court has a conflict. They've got one Court of Appeals, two Courts of Appeals that go the wrong way. And yet all these previous 10 Courts of Appeals went the right way. 30 judges went the right way. Decades of law went the right way. Congress never was able to get the votes to amend it. And now you have six unelected people amending the statute that clearly does not include sexual orientation and gender identity.
So instead of interpreted law, which is what their role is, they're now recreating, rewriting the law.
Yeah, it's a real tragedy.
It's a tragedy.
It's a real tragedy. And the implications are going to be far-reaching. Although this applies to employment, it's just a short step to public accommodations. And then we're talking about restrooms, bathrooms, showers, the whole deal. The only bright light, as I mentioned earlier, is that there's a section on pages 32 to 33 of the slip opinion, that is the original opinion that comes out, that says that it likely will not apply to religious employers. Now, Harris Funeral Homes originally had a religious freedom claim down below, but for whatever reason, they didn't ask the Supreme Court to review that question. That was a fatal flaw because they likely would have won, at least on the religious accommodations. The court said that the First Amendment free exercise right under the Constitution, providing what's called a ministerial exception, protects certain employers, religious employers, but then the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, they said, is a super statute, and that should protect any religious employer. But that will have to be litigated. The good news is that likely does not affect religious employers. The bad news is it's going to have a huge impact across the board in other ways. For more information, stay informed at Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org. That's lc.org.
You've been listening to Faith and Freedom, brought to you by Liberty Counsel. We hope that we have motivated you to stand up for your faith, family, and freedom. Get informed and get involved today. Visit Liberty Counsel's website at lc.org, where you can obtain email alerts and other information to keep you informed and involved. You can also call us at 407-875-1776, lc.org.